This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence. The only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And welcome again, everybody, to another edition of the Landry Football Podcast. This Thursday, October 12th edition, where we'll break down, take a look at some of the key matchups in college football this weekend, and obviously some in the NFL. Not a maybe overly impressive-looking week in college football, but these are the weekends that become real interesting. And, of course, we'll delve into the NFL as well as go into some of those games. Now, want to really start with kind of addressing what I have seen and obviously studied as regards to the Alabama offense. I've got a piece up on the website, LandryFootball.com, kind of breaking down this Alabama defense and how this team is similar and in some ways a little different based upon their personnel versus last year's team. But I want to address the offense with Alabama and kind of take you back to the evolution of this Alabama offense when they made the hire to Lane Kiffin. And then obviously the subsequent end of last year and how that's affected the hiring of Brian Daboll in the offseason and how things have gone to this point. So in order to do that, I kind of want to give you that behind-the-scenes look at how things were handled. We go back a couple of years ago where it was getting ready for a bowl game, and they were looking to, Nick was looking to make a decision, maybe going into not a complete different direction in terms of an offense, but having some input to make his offense more modern, more beneficial to the rules of the college game today. No one has seen offenses evolve more than really good defensive coaches like Nick Saban and see what some of the RPOs and the up-tempo stuff will do to a defense. So, and Nick has been adamant that he doesn't like it. A lot of us that are pure football guys don't like it. But you have to adapt. Adapt or die. Well, no one is better at adapting and staying ahead of the curve than Nick Saban. And so what he did is he brought in Lane Kiffin as a consultant after after Lane was fired at USC. And he just looked at some film, had a little office to do some work in, give some evaluations, and obviously recommendations. And it led to him ultimately deciding to hire Lane. And one of the things we talked about was kind of, you know, how he was going to fit in and everything. And one of the things that Nick is very good at, it kind of managing a staff and coaching the coaches. And the background on Lane Kiffin, people may know the story, the backstory, the Tennessee, the USC, the Raiders. But do you really know the Lane Kiffin, the guy? Well, Lane obviously grew up at the knee of his dad, Monty Kiffin, who, by the way, are completely different personalities. Lane got a very bright guy, always around the game with his dad, and he had a lot of creative ideas. And I consider Lane kind of the creative, artistic type. And so he's very good with that. Now, along with that, it happens to be that he's very immature. Part of it is that he got his opportunities at a young age. And maybe sometimes when that happens, and maybe you don't work your way up as much as other people. You're not as humble, and you maybe feel a little more entitled. I think that's part of it, but I think part of it's just his personality. He's very immature, a little arrogant. And what people may not realize is that he's a little disorganized in terms of how he puts things together. In other words, he tends to go off in a one direction with play calling without a better, bigger picture concept. And that's why he's been very good as a play caller, but not very good as a head coach, because he doesn't do things that are very prudent towards winning at the big-time level. So anyway, Lane comes into Alabama as the offensive coordinator. Now, one of the things that was imperative and certainly executed out to perfection by Nick Saban was, with a personality like Lane and a skill set like Lane, you need to draw out the autistic not autistic, the artistic part of what he can do, while minimizing some of the immaturity and the lack of overview view on things. And so I use the term Nick had Lane on a short leash. And while that may be a little rough to say it that way, that's the reality of what happened. He had him on a short leash, and it worked very well. You saw it win the national championship, and I think you see the offense start to get, you know, grow and develop and become a little bit more modern and become a little bit more difficult to attack, because what teams had become to do is attack the pocket. If you can maximize box defenders and attack the pocket, you can slow down this Alabama offense. Well, when you've got a mobile quarterback, you've got the ability to work the run-pass options and take some vertical shots off of that. You got some big plays, making it more difficult for opposing defenses to do so. So it worked very, very well. And it continued to work because for Lane Kiffin, he took the job to rebuild his career. Ideally, Lane's personality is not going to be a good fit for Nick Saban and vice versa. But where are you going to go to rebuild your career when you're kind of looked at almost as a coaching clown, which that's kind of how he was looked at in the coaching profession and certainly among administrators. So what better way to kind of marry the, hey, here's somebody that can help grow our offense in one direction and help us, but then from Lane's viewpoint, here's somebody that he can learn from and more than anything, just rebuild his reputation. Well, it worked, but to a point. Again, Kiffin, who is a little immature and disorganized, he needed that short leash or else he wouldn't have been successful long-term at Alabama as a coordinator. Nick kept that in check. Now, Kiffin, through his own frustrations, and anybody that's watched Alabama play remembers the much talked about rear end chewing on the sidelines, as well as quite a few behind closed doors that took place. In the eyes of the head coach, it needed to. It was, listen, I don't want to put it this way, but this is the best way to explain it. Anybody that's got kids out there, with some, you have to put your arms around them. The other ones, you have to. You know, read them the riot act. Lane needed to be always, you know, knocked down a few pegs behind the scenes. Well, it happened. Well, instead of taking that as a growing spurt, Lane's immaturity kind of led to resent some of those issues. And so I want to fast forward to last year, which they go into the SEC championship game, win another SEC championship. And there's that gap where Lane's being mentioned for head coaching jobs. Now, full disclosure, there's no way Lane was coming back to Alabama. Nick had had enough of Lane, and Lane had had enough of Nick. So it was going to be coordinator somewhere. He was going to be doing something somewhere with somebody, but it wasn't going to be at Alabama. So the interview process was obviously granted. He thought he had a great shot at the Houston job. That didn't work out as Houston did their homework. Felt increasingly uncomfortable with Lane, and certainly everything is just a stepping stone for Lane, and the lack of maybe stability of building a program just kind of worked against him in that area. But then obviously gets the FAU job, as we all know. Well, this is when he got that job, between the SEC championship game and the first semifinal game, playoff game against Washington, that's where everything changed. The whole dynamics changed. Why? Well, Lane, again, instead of being professional and mature about it and being respectful for, hey, look, I got a job, and it has a lot to do with what I did here at Alabama and learned from Nick Saban, instead he focused on the butt shootings, excuse me, and not liking it, which none of us liked it. I mean, and I got chewed out by, you know, Bill Orangebarger or Bill Belichick. Nick Saban got chewed out by Bill Belichick. We all, you know, Parcells, we all been through it. That's what you learned as a coach. And you understand that some of it's not real fair. And some of it, you're just the victim of them springing. But you got to grow from it and learn from it. Lane is not mature enough to get that. And so he took it as, hey, I'm going to show you. I don't need to listen to Nick anymore. You know, I mean, he didn't tell him that to his face. But Lane was off. House shopping, meetings weren't run on time. There were problems internally leading up to that national semifinal game against Washington. Well, to the untrained eye, people thought everything was fine because they beat Washington handily. But the reality is they had some big issues. You saw a lot of the problems on the offensive line. It became a lot of the lateral step first movement, and it became a little bit more finesse. And it was less establishing the line of scrimmage, which is what Alabama's bailiwick is. So after that game, it was pretty clear that, you know, Lane was going to do whatever he wanted to do because he didn't need Nick Saban anymore in his eyes. He had got his job. Well, then Nick had lost control of Lane because the one thing you've got control of as the head coach is you do your job or you're fired. Well, he's leaving. So there's no, the authority had been usurped at that point. That is the inside story as to why Nick said, you know, this is what we're going to do. And then, you know, for the betterment of Florida Atlantic, betterment of Lane, you know, for us, we're going to move on and have a different play caller. Well, that's the right thing to do, because when people say, oh, you should have kept Lane, you keep Lane and you get more of the mess that's happened. By the way, I want to take a step back again. One of the reasons why Nick Saban brought in Steve Sarkisian, Lane Kiffin wanted to bring him because they were close friends. But in Nick's eyes, he thought, here's a guy that runs the same system as Lane, understands it very well, the nomenclature, the calls, the concepts, can work well with us as an analyst. We'll pay him, and then if something happens with Lane, good or bad, meaning he gets a job or something happens, and I got somebody that I can turn to. Alabama competes in an arena where they're about winning championships every year. So you can have a great season. If something happens, you know that Lane Kiffin will pick up and leave and do what's best for Lane. You better have something in place. Well, Nick Saban's always prepared to the nth degree, and that's what the Steve Sarkisian design was, to have him as a backup to Lane, to put him in Lane spot if it ever needed to. If not, then he's just got an extra analyst that he's paying good money to. They can afford it. That's how they do business here. So once he got that FAU job, it was a mess that week prior to the Washington game. But it was managed as well as could be managed by the head coach. But I can tell you that decision was made that week that after this game, we're moving on. Because I can't trust it. If we get by this game, is what Nick's feeling was, that there's no way that we're going to risk this in a championship game. So Sark comes in and didn't do a bad job in a championship game, but again, part of the problems had existed, and I thought from a schematic standpoint, and it is something that, you know, with Nick in the offseason talking about it, it was they had lost the line of scrimmage. They had lost their ability to control that game in that area, and if you look at Sark, and while he had good play call concepts and play designs, a lot of the same blocking scheme issues and protection issues were problematic in that game. And it cost some negative plays, and it cost them the ability to stay on the field on offense. You know, in short, Alabama's offense is built on controlling the line of scrimmage, the downhill power run, and then obviously to augment that with the passing game, the vertical shots to loosen up the box, and the horizontal shots to be able to get defenses spread out. They want to force defenses deep and wide and attack that way. So that is kind of the way they were going to go about, you know, dealing with it as an offense. And they wanted to go ahead and try to get through the season and get through that last game. But a lot of those concepts didn't quite mesh in the championship game. And one of the real issues that I saw, and everyone talks about, well, Alabama's great defense didn't hold up, and remind everybody that they lost very closely to Clemson on the last play. The main reason is their defense is on the field way too much. If in breaking down that game, the biggest flaw, and I get it to fans and media, if Alabama makes one play on that last defensive drive, the game's over, then everything is great. Well, the reality is they could have survived it. They didn't. But the biggest issue was the offense and the offense's inability to be able to control the football and keep Deshaun Watson off the field. That was the issue and the biggest problem. And so, after looking and examining the situation, there were two things that Nick decided that he wanted to do with his offense. One, he needed to keep the RPO concepts and ideas, but to mesh it with the power run. You know, whereas Sark and Kiffin are spread and, you know, move people out of the box and attack with quickness, Saban wants to maintain power on offense in being able to run the football downhill and then be able to spread out with the when people are crowding the box to defend the run, to take advantage of it and give very simple reads to the passing game so the quarterback can protect the football. So anyway, that's where it kind of went to in the offseason, and there's no doubt that the whole philosophy of Sark, as well as, quite frankly, the personality of Sark, which is completely different than Lane Kiffin, more of a meek guy, certainly would have done things, but as tough as Nick can be on coaches, you know Sark's background and the pressure, that is a concern and has always been with Sark as he's fighting his battle and not having dealt with anybody that's been involved in alcoholism. I'm told it's a day-to-day fight, that was risky. And I think, again, the plan was to have Sark in position in the short term, and then we'll see how it plays out. And how it played out was, look, we need to look at some other options. So who does he go to? He goes to somebody that, A, knows Nick and knows how to work for him. Brian Daboll worked for Nick as a graduate assistant at Michigan State. Brian Daboll has been involved with a lot of different offensive concepts at the pro level. He also has a really good, keen understanding and challenged him to study a lot of the RPO systems, and let's incorporate the best offense that we can here while not losing our offensive identity of being power, yet being able to do the RPO options because we want to have a mobile quarterback. And that's where we are today. And as I look at this offense, you know, everybody keeps asking me every week, well, I'm concerned about them being a drop-back offense, and if they got a drop, well, they're not going to be a drop-back offense, folks. That's not what Jalen Hurts is. Jalen Hurts has been a one-read quarterback, and if it's in man coverage, he'll tuck it and run because nobody accounts for him in man. That's what their offensive design is. Now, when they do drop him back and move him, what I have noticed on film is he's become a little bit more proficient and going off the first read to the second. So he is growing and he is developing. Now, is it good enough to win a national championship? Well, we'll find that out later. I think it is. Whether they will or not, we'll see. But it's not the lack of a passing game that cost them a championship last year. It was the lack of the physical identity that cost them. This Alabama team, if it's a game where you have to say, let's play drop back 45 times and throw it from the pocket, Alabama's not going to be a player in there. Well, that's not how Alabama plays, and that's not how they win championships, and that's not how they're going to do it this year if they do it. They don't have an offense that's going to be a drop-back offense. They don't have a quarterback that's a drop-back quarterback. Well, what they'll do is they'll drop him in the deep 7-9 steps, and they'll give him some options and move the pocket. He'll go through some quick reads. He has some run-pass options built in, some screens built in, along with the power running game. Well, that's what you're seeing. And I know that regular season is different than the playoffs, and we're going to see them play a good Auburn and maybe a good Georgia team before they could get to the playoffs, and maybe even match up against Clemson again. And they're going to have to do more offensively. As teams are able to slow down their offense, they're going to have to be able to work the screen game. They're going to have to be able to work the vertical passing game. But I think getting away from their offensive identity really cost them last year. So that is kind of what I wanted to discuss in terms of how this offense is evolved and certainly what Brian Daboll's stamp is. That's what Brian Daboll does. for them. He's really good at teaching a little better pocket presence than Lane was, but yet he has really mastered the concepts of the college RPOs and some of the things that you can do. Now, I will tell you that as things go forward, there's some different elements into the offense that they haven't unveiled that I think that they will put in play if need be. And it is some of the motions and stuff that can get defenses deployed, because what they want to do ultimately is run the football. Alabama wins with running the football on offense. They get points, big plays, and we saw that with A.J. McCarron readily. They made big plays at the passing game, but they win games with the running game and then defense. So that's how it's playing out, and I'm very curious to see how it plays out the rest of the year. So wanted to appreciate your time in getting into that. Want to get into some of the games. And, folks, get a chance on Friday night. Watch Eric Dungy of Syracuse going up against Clemson. It's a good young quarterback. The Syracuse team is fighting hard, not very good. But this is one of those games where you wonder if Clemson, they tend to be lulled. Boston College game tends to just go back and forth into my mind is how poorly they play, but still manage to win. We'll see if this is going to be a slip in terms of effort, a focus for Clemson. Clemson certainly, this is not the type of game that they'll lose, I don't think, because I think they'll find a way to win. But it wouldn't surprise me if it's a little bit closer, if they don't play well. Washington State goes to Cal. I tell you what, I'm impressed with is how this Washington State team is handling things. I thought they played very well, dominating Oregon. Want to see how they deal on Friday night, going on the road, Strawberry Canyon, playing the Cal Bears. And this looks like an Apple Cup for the ages, and we've seen a few of those. I've been to a few of those. This should be a lot of fun, but they got to take care of business against Cal. In the early slate on Saturday, boy, is it a big must-win for Butch Jones. I'm not going to make a case that Butch Jones can save his job, because I think at this point he'd have to pull himself out of the fire and revive himself to save it. But it's doable. But let me tell you how it has to be done. They have to show market improvement. They have to win this week against South Carolina. Then they have to move forward, be competitive against Alabama. They're going to get beat. Beat Kentucky, beat Southern Miss, beat Missouri, beat LSU, and beat Vanderbilt. That happens. It would give the ammunition to the athletic director to keep him, which is what he wants to do. A loss to South Carolina, particularly a decisive loss, would pretty much seal his fate, where the athletic director, no one could save him, because then you're going to go into a beatdown against Bama, and then you don't know what's going to happen on the road at Kentucky against the team that's, you know, you have back-to-back losses and a beat-up game against Alabama, and you got to go back the next week on the road to Lexington. You know where I'm going with this. This could get ugly really fast. So, big game. This South Carolina team is playing loose. Certainly missed their great receiver, but the quarterback, Jake Bentley's played well. They've been inconsistent, though, and you just don't know what South Carolina's going to get on the road. I think it also says a lot about Butch Jones, is how hard this team will play will be pivotal. I don't expect TCU to get beat in Manhattan against Kansas State, but we all know that when you least expect that this Kansas State team will maximize you and make things tough for you. TCU's a good team. Are they a national caliber playoff team? I do not see that. But they're good. I think they win this game on the road, but just throwing it out there, could be a little closer than people might think. Hey, the Oklahoma-Texas game is always great. If you hadn't been to the Red River Shootout, now named Red River Rivalry, you should do it. It's a great game. But I've been to some games where these been to this game when both of these teams were ranked really high. And while neither are ranked really high and neither one are going to be involved nationally, and I know mathematically Oklahoma's still involved, and for that purpose, Texas, but neither one of these teams are national playoff caliber, of course. But it is important. It's important for both. It's important for two young coaches to get off on the right track. It's one of those, but you didn't beat Texas or you didn't beat Oklahoma type game. So big leg up on whoever wins this game. Like the way Texas is playing. Oklahoma's got to play better on defense. Really struggled against Baylor, really struggled last week against Iowa State. You would expect them to rebound and play well. Split right in half, orange and crimson. It'll be fun. It'll be entertaining, despite the fact that not a great deal is on the national line here. Can Purdue push Wisconsin and Camp Randall? I don't know how much they can push them, but this is the best play-calling effort I have seen in college football relative to the lack of talent making plays. That's Jeff Brohm, what he's done at Purdue. Wisconsin's very good, but they're very good because they're solid in every area. They don't make mistakes. They don't put themselves in harm's way because of mistakes. They don't make big plays, but they don't have a lot of negative plays out. But this is, again, a game in which if they start off slow, they had a pick six last week against Nebraska. It kind of put the game back into play for Nebraska. If that happens, Purdue could make this a game. But like the consistency of Wisconsin, this is a very solid football team. Hey, Georgia Tech and Miami takes place. And Miami, I understand, is a pretty solid favorite. I think Georgia Tech's the better team. Maybe missing it here. Miami doesn't have much of a running game. I like this Georgia Tech team. I don't think they're a great team, but I think they're better than Miami. I think this game has a chance to be a lot closer than people think, and I actually think Tech will win the game. We'll see. Auburn LSU. You've heard me, and we've had the LSU topics past couple of podcasts that, you know, everything is all great at LSU. They've won against Florida. Problems weren't solved there. They won a game. Now, the problem was, hey, you got the negativity, you know, calmed down a little bit because of the loss against Troy. But they haven't fixed the problems. Florida's not a very good team. Don't see a way that LSU can win the football game. Auburn would have to lose it. This is a much better Auburn team. I think if Auburn plays their best game and LSU plays their best game, I think it's a decisive Auburn win. It is in Baton Rouge. If Auburn plays sloppy football, anything can happen. It's a great equalizer. Win the turnover margin by plus three if you're LSU, anything can happen. But I see this as a significantly better Auburn team at this point than LSU. A&M Florida, can Florida rebound? This A&M team is playing better football. I know we will focus on the collapse against UCLA, and I know that things have been toxic at A&M. I know that the die has been cast in most people's eyes, trying to figure out how to phrase it. Maybe the term has been used inside A&M that it's toxic, that maybe even Kevin Sumlin won't want to be back. I don't deny any of that right now. I think it's real. But as I tell everybody, when everyone already has every decision made about who's staying and who's going and coaching this and coaching that, it's defined largely by what happens the rest of the year. You beat Florida, beat Mississippi State, New Mexico, Ole Miss, LSU. You end up losing to Auburn. You know, listen, we're talking about, you know, a three-loss team. I don't know that you make that move if you're then, if particularly if you're shown positive. You know, they played Alabama better than anybody's played them. Listen, we'll see what they do against Auburn, how well they play. I mean, that will say a lot, as well as, you know, how they finish these games, about whether there's a possibility of him staying, keeping his job, and everybody, you know, saying, hey, let's rally around and let's get this turned around for next year type of talk. Florida, lose to Florida, it's a different ball game, and it's the negativity setting in, and then all of a sudden, you got to go into a bye week of negativity and speculation. This college football atmosphere can be very, very toxic at times in terms of how it is just you're hung out to dry in some areas. Alabama goes up against Arkansas. Boy, this Arkansas defense is not very good. They can't protect their quarterback. A subpar performance, relatively speaking, for Alabama means another big-time blowout by Alabama this week against Arkansas. Look for that to respond. Look for Georgia to roll against Missouri. That's real. I don't know how much resistance Nebraska is going to put up against Ohio State. My sense is not a lot. I see this offense getting better. We're going to find out how much better Ohio State's offense is later. But this will be a little more of a test than they have seen. So I'm very curious to see it. Michigan State, Minnesota, interesting game. Spartans playing well. Well coached under D'Antonio as always. The emotional, aggressive P.J. Fleck. Going to be a lot of fun. What can Utah do? Very solid Utah team that, again, very much like a Wisconsin in terms of physical. You know, Utah's great on special teams. Utah's usually a little better schematically on defense. Going up against USC. We know about USC's talent, but, boy, they are injured. Going to be interesting to see. Hey, a game outside the Power 5 and the Group of 5 that I think is worth watching late at night. Boise State, San Diego State. San Diego State's unbeaten. This Boise team is not as good of a Boise team as we've seen in the past, but it's still pretty good and very capable of playing on the road against the Aztecs, he said, and getting that done. Washington, Arizona State, Oregon, Stanford. Like Washington, like Stanford in these games. But that's kind of a look at where some of the key matchups are. Remind you, we're going to have complete film breakdowns of all of these games on LandryFootball.com. Check it out. Break it down inside the film room for you. Give you the details that you can't get anywhere else from a coaching and scouting perspective. So there we go from there. All right. NFL got a great game tonight. Philly, Carolina. I don't know if it'll be a great game. It's a matchup that's intriguing is what I meant to say. This Philadelphia team under Carson Wentz playing well, working the tight ends, good offensive line play, defense is playing pretty well. This Carolina team, after not looking real impressive on tape the first 2 weeks, suddenly playing very good football. Should be a good matchup. Should tell us about a lot about both of these teams. Look for Atlanta to take care of business against Miami. They need to get things back on track. Can Minnesota do enough on defense against Green Bay? Don't think so. What about New Orleans, Detroit? We'll see if this New Orleans defense can play well against a pretty talented Detroit offense at home in New Orleans. We'll see how that plays out. Look for New England to kind of silence the Jets' issues this week. Washington's playing good football, going to beat San Francisco, I think. Baltimore, inconsistent there. A little better at home against Chicago, probably. How about Houston, Cleveland? Yeah, they're going to start Kevin Hogan in Cleveland. Like Houston, a rebound. Tough week last week, losing two key players, obviously, in Watt and Merciless. They're two best defensive players. Like this Houston team at home. Tampa, Arizona. This is an intriguing game for another reason, in that Tampa's trying to find their way. Arizona's maybe losing their way a little bit. Going to be interesting to see. How about the Rams and Jacksonville? Two upstart teams. Jacksonville on defense. Rams been pretty solid on offense. Going to be a good matchup. How can they control and pressure the protections of the Rams and get them off their mark on offense is going to be key. But can Jacksonville do anything on offense? Very, very tough. Kind of like the Rams on the road here. Pittsburgh, not playing well at the line of scrimmage. Ben Roethlisberger forced on the football, not running the football consistently with Le'Veon Bell. Thought a couple of weeks ago the Steelers had it going. Last week, not so much. They go on the road to Kansas City. You better play well if you're going to have a chance to beat Kansas City. They're the most consistent team in the league. They're playing well on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They maximize big plays, the run, the pass. And defensively, they're very good. So we'll see what Pittsburgh can do. Chargers go up against the Raiders. We'll see how that plays out. The Raiders not getting anything done without Derek Carr. They're an explosive passing offense. We'll see how that plays out. Maybe the Chargers finally get their first win of the year. Giants have no chance going in Denver, don't they? I don't think so, but always beware of the team that's desperate. Giants have lost their weapons on offense. The offensive line's not very good. Denver plays well at home. Hard for me to make a case for the Giants getting off the schneid this week. And then Indianapolis and Tennessee. Jacoby Brissett, can he play well enough? Mariota, game-time decision. Is he going to play? Without Mariota, this Tennessee team is not nearly as good. Good line of scrimmage team can run the football, but Mariota is the difference between them being a really good team and just being a pretty average team. So, going to be an interesting week. Again, we're learning more and more about these teams, but other than Kansas City being consistent, no one else has been all that consistent. And looking to see exactly what these teams are or are not. It's going to be fun in the next few weeks. Remember, we always say it takes 4 to 5 weeks to begin to see what these teams are. Not we'll know in 4 or 5 weeks, but it's a beginning process. And then, of course, it's about attrition and how you deal with that. Well, that'll be a wrap for today's Landry Football Podcast. Want to remind you that you can check out everything at LandryFootball.com. Got free information. We've got inside, in-depth information. Breaking the game down inside the film room. You've got different pay periods, 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year. Great discount opportunities that will give you the best insights into college football, into the NFL that you could find. Inside news and information, the breakdown from a coaching and scouting perspective. So check us out at LandryFootball.com and check us out on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast next Tuesday, right here.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
Do you like bets and ball games? Yeah, you do, and so do I. Do you like to win when you bet on ball games? We do, and that's why we're here to help guide you to winning wagers. I'm Brian Edwards, the host of the Games Galore podcast. Each week, we break down all the action in football, basketball, and the UFC. Are you a soccer fan? Maybe tennis? No, we aren't either. We stick to the good stuff. Pigskin, hoops, college and pro, and UFC action. We bring in elite guests with experience in sports gambling from all across the country. Tune in and let us help you make some greenbacks. The Games Galore Pod is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.